Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was hell or tail.
Lemon face. Alright.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Who Goes the Podcast, episode 235. This is Jorge.
This is Matt.
This is Rhett.
I didn't cut it, it's there.
Oh, good.
But I don't know if I'm going to post it.
At least Patreon
put
will
it
get
on.
That.
We may just have two intros.
Yeah, just send that to Patreon. Everybody else gets this boring ass one.
How's it going, fellas?
I mean, it's finally going. It's
pretty good.
It's going now.
Yeah, it's late. It's late. Yeah. It's late. At least it's not hot, though.
Dude, I just want October to be over.
Why is that?
It's every year. It's like so fucking busy. It's just our busy season, and it's exhausting, and I don't want it anymore. I mean, like, I still want it.
You can choose not to be busy during October.
I don't want it right now.
Mm.
I got all the Halloween stuff we got to do. You know, all the
fun
stuff.
What is all the Halloween stuff?
I don't mean, like, Halloween, but I just mean, like, you know, all the festivals and conventions and musicals and all this other stuff that's going on that we do, and you know, all the October-y stuff.
Mm.
At least once Halloween's over, I can get back to making pies.
What about the ritual sacrifice for October?
I mean, those are fun, but like, we don't
broadcast those.
When you have to,
did you introduce
them,
yourself?
He did.
I did.
Yeah. I'm so jacked up on your shitty musical taste.
Hugo's that podcast.
I don't even know what to
you
do
love
anymore.
Love that fucking song. As so, you should.
So anywho, how's it going?
Chill.
How you been?
Hanging out.
What you mean to say?
Tired, stressed. Had a lot of fun this week. I went to Evil Dead the Musical.
How was that?
It wasn't as good as Toxic Avenger the Musical.
It wasn't as tight.
No, but the amount of blood in there, holy fuck, dude. They're just like blasting. I don't know if you saw the picture on our Instagram,
I
but
did.
I was soaked. My fucking denim jacket is like, now got this permanent slight pink tinge to it.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
That's also cool.
Alia hated it.
She hated it.
Why?
Hated it. She was not feeling the blood getting everywhere. Like,
oh, she just didn't want to get stained.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even that. It was like just that she didn't want it right then and there.
She didn't want to get yeeted on.
Pretty much, yeah. And I mean, I looked like I came right out of the Evil Dead. Like, I'm just soaked in blood and. That was pretty
blood,
fun.
Bathed in bleed.
And we went to Horrorgasm, the first ever Horrorgasm art festival in North
that
Park.
That was fun.
We had a table with the homie Brian Asman.
Brian read for like an hour.
Jesus Christ, yeah. He's like, hey, will you film this for me?
That and homie, like, that homie is brave, because I wouldn't.
Dog, that's my bread and butter right there.
I wouldn't have the balls to be up there for more than 30 seconds.
Well, and he's like, will you film this? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And when he first like pulled out his story and he was like, you know, rehearsing it, it looked like it was like 3 or 4 pages. That shit ended up being like 20 pages long. I'm sitting there holding the camera. My arms are getting tired. I had to get Brian's girlfriend to come in and like hold the camera for a minute so I could stretch out my arms.
All that lifting didn't really help.
Yeah, we bought some cool art. I bought an art from a kid, which was tight. Yeah. It was, did you see the Beetlejuice one?
I did.
I bought that shit.
Nice.
Cause like so have you seen the portrait that we have in our house that my friend Nicole Wasak did, where it's Alia and I, American Gothic style,
by the way.
So Alia looks perfect in that. And I look like a cheesy ass Bobby Hill.
Yeah.
That's how the Beetlejuice thing was, the wife looked perfect, but the husband looked like a silly ass fucking cartoon character. And so I bought it because I wanted that kid to sell some of his art there.
Yeah.
But I did my good deed for the month while I was there.
Oh, God.
And I picked up something for our local autist. And it's right here.
Mm.
Local autist? Oh, my God. This is going to be so fantastic.
He can already tell what it is.
It's the feller from Midsummer. It's a Midsummer art print.
I forgot the girl's name who did it.
Oh, cool.
This is very thoughtful, man.
Yeah. There's another sticker of a dude in a bear costume in my car, but...
Dude!
This is the Oracle.
I'm going to steal that sticker.
The inbred Oracle.
I'm stealing that shit.
Yeah, I forgot her name. I don't know if her her thing is on there, but if I find out who she is, I will post it on Instagram with a tag. Nice. I really liked her art. I bought an audition piece from her.
Dude, and then, thank you very much, man. No, this got some other, the May Queen on here.
Some other really cool stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah,
I cool. will frame this.
I mean, that's kind of the idea.
That's sort of. That's a cut.
Why are you gonna cut that one? Of all the things to cut in this. So, yeah, thanks.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah, that's all you get. That's what you get now because I cut that part out. I'm not cutting it.
You should cut it. You should probably cut that.
Not cutting it.
Brett's just sliding it back across the table to me. He's like, here, take that.
I'm sending that directly to
Sophia. No, I really
Sophia.
Love it. I really fucking love it. And I watched that movie again yesterday.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know why, but I'm not surprised.
Sophia hadn't seen it.
Mmm.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Watch anything else, Matt?
I did. I watched a movie that got me in trouble on Twitter. Called Three from Hell.
Oh my god.
It's a total piece of shit.
That's okay.
Did it get you in trouble, or is it just you at your normal antics?
I mean, it got more of a response than my normal antics. People did not like the fact
Jeremy Gardner called your ass out. Kind of disappointing.
Jeremy Gardner called me out because I tagged Rob Zombie in the fucking post when I said the movie was garbage.
See, the thing is,
if your movie's good, I'm gonna tag you. Because it's, you know, I want you to know what I think of your movie. If your movie's bad, I'm going to tag you because I want you to know what
the
I think of your movie.
The thing is.
The tag works both ways.
Yeah.
You know, the unfortunate part about that is that, like, now we're all labeled as assholes instead of just you.
No.
Well, newsflash, we are all assholes.
That's true.
Now that Chris is gone, we are all assholes.
And newsflash, what are the chances that you or I would appreciate this film?
None. Potential. Zero. None.
I like 31.
No. No, it's worse than 31.
It's worse than 31?
It's so bad. Like, Rob Zombie has no ability to write dialogue. His dialogue is just fucking terrible. He has, like, I don't think he knows how people actually speak, where they have conversations and each person utters five words and three of those words have to be fuck. It just doesn't work.
Well, there's, I mean, very, it's almost how you talk.
There's very little. That's not true. I express coherent, cohesive ideas. This does not. There's very little plot.
Got him.
And the plot that is there goes just that nowhere. Little,
was enough.
I'm glad we don't cuss on this show.
I'm glad we don't either.
So yeah, I watched that. That was terrible. I watched
decidedly not tight.
No, decidedly not tight. I watched another movie that Letterboxd doesn't want to show me. Oh, I watched two more movies. I watched a movie called Brutal, which is a Japanese movie. It's about an hour long. I loved it.
How is it? It was about an hour long.
Yeah. Was it brutal? It was actually pretty fucking brutal. It's about, like, there's a male serial killer.
You don't have to be racist about it.
And a female serial killer. And, you know, they kind of run into each other because each one is interfering with the other one's work. And then there's, like, this kind of, like, love thing. And it's Japanese. So, of course, it gets really fucking weird.
Is there some karma-chi love thing happening here, baby,
you
or
have
what?
You have to watch and find out, dude. But it's really good. It's really bloody. It's really simply done. And then I watched another movie called Weed G's Halloween Night.
Wow.
You ever watched The Ghoulies.
Do they smoke weed, dude?
I mean, a little bit, dude. A little bit.
Good.
I don't know how you got that. You're really, like, perceptive, dude.
Yeah.
If you ever watched Ghoulies and were like, I like this, but I wish this was about weed, then that's it. You know, it's basically what it is. It's made by Full Moon, who made, did they make Ghoulies? I don't know. They make they make all of the weird low budget
things.
Well,
now that
we've
got a new
Evil
Bong. Now that
we've
got a new ring out artist on the show, maybe Chris Cooper will fuck
yeah,
shit up this
maybe
time.
Maybe I should have, like, actually Googled some information, but it's made by Full Moon. And it's silly fucking weed-related puppets who are called forth after a Ouija board on Halloween.
Ouija board.
It's not good.
I mean, it's objectively not good, but unless you like shitty movies, like the kind that Full Moon puts out, like I happen to.
I like shitty movies.
Oh. How many Full Moon movies have you seen?
A few.
Oh yeah, which ones?
You wouldn't have heard of them.
Ah.
like the Bell meme from 2010.
Oh, the Bell meme.
Yeah. Ah, yes.
With glasses.
My glasses.
All right.
All right. Cool.
Yeah, so that's what I've seen.
Cool. I don't think I talked about it last week, but I watched this little show called Two Sentence Horror Stories.
Okay. I've been meaning to check that out.
It's definitely a TV transfer to the show. You're gonna say
it's definitely a show.
So it's not great, but there is definitely some bright spots in the series. I'm like 7 episodes in. Okay. And there's this funny sort of like pseudo Japanese style episode that's pretty good. Overall, I'd give it like a 7 out of 10.
Okay, well, I mean, that's at least promising.
Yeah, and then I watched this other thing called Daybreak on Netflix. It's a post-apocalyptic zombie outbreak type deal.
Okay.
I would say this. If you're a teenager, it's real good fun times. If you're an adult, the memery is too hard. It goes full fucking millennial. No, it's just there's things they're referencing Snapchat and there's just things that to me I go, well, I don't get it. So this makes me angry.
It's Generation Z, dude.
Yeah.
You're no longer with it.
But it's fun. I will say that. It is pretty fun. It's kind of like Dead Rising and Gen Z made a show.
I don't know what Gen Z is.
Like
it's the generation beneath the millennials, because millennials are fucking.
We're millennials.
We're in technically. Their 30s.
We're millennials on paper. Yeah. I don't even know what a millennial is, to be honest. I thought it meant you turned 18 after 2000.
Yeah.
We're first run prototype millennials.
Yeah. I think 82 is millennials on paper.
But like your sister's Gen Z.
I'm 82.
Is she? I thought she was a millennial. No. Nah, where's the cutoff?
It's not really a date, man. I think it's just
an state of mind.
It's an attitude, dude.
I hate them all. Thanks, I hate it. That's a Gen Z thing, right?
Yeah.
Thanks, I hate it. Yeah, that shit's dumb. It's like that mumble rap bullshit. Hey, you like mumble rap? I don't like you.
I do like mumble rap. No, you don't. I do like some of it. Some of it's good.
Like who? Oh, you wouldn't have heard of him.
Like XXXTentacion. I like
he
that stuff.
He sucks.
He does not he is suck. Awful. Even though he beats the shit out of his. Well,
he's dead. He don't beat the shit out of anybody.
He don't beat the shit out of nobody.
You know what he beats? Dirt, dog.
But I do like some mumble rap. Like even like Post Malone and his early stuff. He's terrible too. He's not bad.
I don't get it. You know what I think it is? I think it's that the entire population is now like lethargic and jaded. And so this shit.
What's all the Xannies, homie?
Yeah. This is like.
So what's your?
This is boring.
You take Xannies, bro?
I would love to take Xannies.
Why don't you?
But I have to raise children.
Benzos, dude.
Anywho,
and you mix benzos with booze, it'll do good things for you.
Yeah, dude, it'll do great things.
Benzo with pleasure.
Benzo with boop. Hey, I watched some stuff.
Hold on, let me make sure.
Make sure what?
Stop talking for one.
He's
second.
He's like, no. Let me make sure you posted a picture.
You've been antagonistic since I showed up. Yeah. I don't appreciate it.
It's because you brought him peach piss.
This is good TV.
I think that's it. The OA is a piece of shit show, and that's it.
I watched Parasite.
Are we doing that next week?
I think we really. Then I think
you probably
we
shouldn't say a thing.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not going to, but I watched it.
Alia was really excited to do that. She wanted to come tonight, but she has work. So
okay.
She really wants.
But you watched it.
I watched it. I won't say.
It's like I watched the movie and I won't say a thing about it.
Yeah.
I'll say. Yeah. I can. I guess I can if we're gonna do it next week. Good job. Yeah. Okay. Good.
So since you can't say anything about that, you want me to say how bad Three from Hell sucks again? Hey, guess what? Three from Hell fucking sucks.
Hot take.
Yeah. You know what, too? Because the feller just passed away and people are really...
Yeah, you know why?
That means the movie's
good. He was embarrassed that this movie was such a piece of shit. That's why he died. he died of embarrassment and shame.
Are you saying Sid Haig died of shame from Three from Hell?
You know, all I'm saying is this movie went into theaters for like 3 days, then Sid Haig went into the hospital, and then they announced a release date for the movie, and then he died. So, you know, coincidence?
I
conspiracy? Who knows?
God damn.
Damn.
I thought I was making a fucked up joke, but...
No, this is fact, dog.
All right. What else?
I just got out a couple hours ago. I saw Blue Velvet at the Kid Cinema.
So a nice uplifting film before you showed up.
It was fucking, because I've never had the opportunity to see it in a theater. That movie, almost 35 years later, is fucking bonkers, dude. Yep. It really is.
Have you seen Blue?
No.
I think that would be your favorite of the Lynch ones, along with probably Lost Highway.
I don't think I've seen any Lynch movie. No, I've seen Eraserhead.
How do you have such a strong opinion of him?
If I've seen Eraserhead. I cannot stand Twin Peaks.
Oh.
At all.
Honestly, Twin Peaks.
At all.
I like Twin Peaks a lot, but it's not my favorite thing of his. Yeah. I like his movies.
I don't know. What else has he done? He's done like Mulholland Drive, which I haven't
Mulholland
seen.
Mulholland Drive. He did Inland Empire. He did Eraserhead.
I've seen that.
He did Elephant Man.
I've seen that.
He did Dune, which is fucking wacky.
I've not seen that because I'm reading the book, but then I'm going to watch it.
It's a total like mismatch of material with director, but it's an interesting one.
Because he's one of those dudes that's like, I'm very cerebral and I do like a lot of weird things, but what's actually happening here?
He does a lot of surrealist shit. Yeah. Okay. I mean, for lack of a better word, I mean, some of the movies don't have really linear narratives, but Blue Velvet has kind of, well, it does. It has a linear narrative, but it still gets into surrealist territory.
I hope you brought me some Yellow Starburst, dude.
Wild at Heart is a great Lynch one that I think you would
not seen that. I've never even heard of that one.
Have you seen Wild at Heart with Nicolas Cage and Laura Dern?
Yeah, that's a good film.
Fucking great. Yeah. You would like that, man.
Speaking of Nicolas Cage, y'all hear the new movie he's doing where he's going to be in a haunted amusement park? Yeah,
he's fighting the fucking, it's like Chuck E. Cheese style
characters. It's like Five Nights at Freddy's meets fucking National Lampoon's Holiday. Holiday Vacation?
I like that Cage is really just like, leading fuck it. Into that. Fuck it. Send them all. Send them.
I was talking to somebody recently at that Horrorgasm art show, and they were talking about Nick Cage, and they're like, yeah, you know, I can't watch him anymore. Like, he started doing some really zany stuff in like the like 90s and early 2000s. I'm like, if you think that shit's zany, like, that motherfucker just
stopped
caring.
That's a weird attitude to have about Nicolas Cage, because he's almost done exclusively zany shit.
Both of you have seen Bad Lieutenant, Portal Call, New Orleans,
fuck,
right?
Yeah, homie.
No, I've seen Bad Lieutenant with Harvey Keitel.
Which is good for different reasons.
But I haven't seen the other one.
It's
not like related, right?
Well, the thing is, not directly, no. It was like in development hell forever, a sequel to that film. And so it was weird. Werner Herzog. Who's fucking hilarious, by the way, inadvertently. He got the script and he wanted to direct this Hollywood script just because. And so him and Cage hooked up and said, we'll just use this script as a loose structure and basically improvise around it. He let Cage go fucking nuts. It is. It's fucking.
Is it as good as the Harvey Keitel one?
Well, I like it better. It's a totally different type of film. Okay. It's both of them just fucking howling at the moon, basically.
Because that man, that Keitel one is fucking bananas. And when he's like jerking off outside of the car with that girl, like that's a really
see. There's stuff like that. Yeah. Of all of Cage's roles, I'd say that's probably his most unhinged one.
Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah. It has some scenes where you're like, there's no.
I mean,
fucking
even
way
even this, in his like supposedly like normie films. Like
Raising Arizona, he was still fucking
like Matchstick
crazy.
Men. He was a fucking
his delivery.
Yeah. I mean, anywho, that movie's supposed to be called Wally's Wonderland.
Yeah, which is a weird fucking name. It feels a little too National Lampoon, doesn't it?
Yeah, like Wally World.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, and he's in an amusement park, and like, I mean, that could be cool because it does sound like Five Nights at Freddy's, but
yeah.
He's a janitor forced to spend the night in a twisted amusement park. Yeah.
It's literally Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah. He sees it as Pale Rider versus Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
I'm in.
I mean, yeah, I definitely think that's something that we'll be covering whenever it comes out, which has no release date yet. So that's hella tight.
That kind of there's a few other news items if you want to segue into that.
Dead by Dawn. Or Dead by Dawn, it's a fan film for Evil Dead that was made in one night for $200.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks pretty good. You can watch it all online on YouTube. It's called Dead by Dawn Evil Dead fan film.
really on the nose there with the
title. Why not? You know, it's something new. If you're bored of watching the same old shit. Which we started making like a list where we can just random generate a number and pick a movie when we don't know what to watch. We're up to like 15 movies now.
Nice.
But like we're adding. That's the thing. I added The Wrestler today because like I watched a YouTube video and I was like, God damn, I love that. I love that movie though. Dude, that's like my fucking Seabiscuit right there. Like that's my fucking, I don't know, what's another movie
that's a tough movie to watch.
Yeah, it's if you're a wrestling fan, like it's so good. I mean, it's good anyways, but like when you understand the ins and outs of the business, it's even better. Dead by Daylight is getting a Nightmare Edition in time for Christmas, which is basically just like Dead by Daylight, but with all the DLC. So you can buy it for $40 on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. And I won't be playing with you because I play on PC. Master Race.
Wow. Master Race.
That's what the PC is.
Good.
Yeah. It's probably better that I clarified that. PC is the master race because it is so much stronger than all of the
final solution of gaming.
There you go.
Console.
Yeah. Nice. And graphical integrity.
And frame rate.
Oh, I'm sorry. Graphical purity. There we go.
Ooh.
Shit.
Yeah. There you go. Give me a couple.
Yeah. Did y'all see that Grudge trailer?
No.
No, but I've heard really good things about the new Grudge movie.
With John Cho?
No. It's kind of funny that they picked one of the only three Asian actors in Hollywood to be in the movie, though.
Is Sam Raimi a producer on this one as well? It's the upcoming 2021.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
Yeah.
Looks good. The trailer looks fine. I'm at least interested.
I've heard good things. I also heard good things about Dr. Sleep.
Yep.
That's next week.
The initial reactions so far have been good, but
yeah, but
those are always good at screenings.
The people that I've heard it from are like the people who tend to be very enthusiastic about things like this, not wanting to say that they blindly suck the cock of all of these big like adaptation movies, but they kind of blindly suck the cock of all of these big adaptation movies.
I'm just going on, I hope it should be good to me because it's Mike Flanagan and he did A Haunting of Hill House and it should be a far more
fun movie than The Shining. Not to say that killing children and sucking their souls out is fun.
You said it's a much different film. It's a much different book.
It's more of a heist movie than anything, which is kind of, you know, which should be interesting.
Dr. Sleep is?
Yeah.
Dude, I read the book and I could not tell you shit about it. I don't remember anything.
It's kind of like a soul heist movie. You don't remember anything about it?
I don't remember anything about it. I remember it follows the kid from The Shining, like after he grows up, Danny, after he grows up.
You literally remembered the first 10 pages.
And he's like back in Maine, I think. And I think he meets up with some girl that he knew when he was younger. Maybe. And they go on adventures. And he can fly, but only an inch or so high and only for a foot or two.
You don't remember much of that book, man. Fuck.
James Wan. You know who this is?
I do.
No. Who's James Wan?
James Wan did the first Saw.
He did Saw
and the Conjuring franchise and
oh I hate him
and all that. Yeah, well, nonetheless,
he is
doing a film called Malignant and it got a big prime summer 2020 release date.
Summer.
And no one knows anything about it except that it's a big budget horror film like the last couple he's done. And it's gonna be more on the supernatural side of his auvoir.
On the supernatural side than The Conjuring?
He did fucking Furious 7, I believe, and he also did Aquaman.
Okay.
So he's expanded into other stuff.
Yikes.
And then it also will incorporate elements of science fiction and body horror. Hocus Pocus 2.
One sec.
Yeah.
There is a YouTuber called Nakey Jakey. And he does these sort of long form nostalgia porn videos. And he did a video on horror in video games, not necessarily horror video games, but horror elements and also horror video games. It's like a 30-minute video. And I highly recommend it if you're a fan of sort of like nostalgia breakdowns of things in our past.
Huh.
Continue.
I don't like Hocus Pocus at all.
And you don't like the movie at all?
Hocus absolutely Pocus. Fucking not. And just yeah. because it's like, oh, we need Halloween movies, and this is one of
no,
them.
No, there's something about that movie that women love. I don't know if it's because it's like three strong female characters or what. Strong. But
Bette Midler.
Yeah. Kathy Najimy.
From a distance.
That's Peggy Hill.
I like Beaches. That's a great movie.
I'm sure.
I don't especially like Hocus Pocus, but I don't mind it. I think it's pretty harmless in terms of like Halloween movies.
Yeah.
Like it's just as good or as bad as like Welcome to Halloween Town.
What is Welcome to Halloween Town?
There's just not very many good movies, Halloween family movies. There's just not many good ones, I don't think.
What don't you like about?
I just find it very grating, and I don't like. I just don't. Look, I'm not big on Bette Midler. Is a like she's a very talented lady.
Yeah,
but you need to. That's a.
I ain't trying.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
I ain't trying to be.
Fuck off.
I'm not trying to be conversational about it. Yeah, but like. But is it more you think it's a bad movie, or is it just not for you?
Just not. You know what? I think a little bit of both.
Okay.
I don't find it very, well, dude, it's really,
D.
It's not good.
I mean,
it wasn't good when it, okay, like this got, it got a following over time.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it became an annual tradition. Like, oh, look, here's a Halloween movie with three witches. And it's like, people didn't flock to this when it came out.
You know what?
Which is fine. That happens a lot of the time.
But I kind
of
feel the same way about it as I do about Beetlejuice. Not Beetlejuice. I'm sorry.
What?
Edward Scissorhands.
Oh.
I kind of get sort of a hokey feeling from Edward Scissorhands, and I get the same hocus pocus.
God, I haven't watched that Edward Scissorhands ever.
Light years. You don't think that's light years?
No. Pocus? I'm not saying one is better than the other, but
quality-wise, you're not saying.
But I feel like the feeling of it is kind of like sort of happy-go-lucky and goofy to me, and I think it's mostly harmless.
Sure. Well, yeah, okay. But I bring it up because some people will be very pleased, I'm sure, that the sequel is coming out on Disney Plus. So add another property to Disney Plus. They're doing, yeah,
Hocus Pocus 2.
Yeah. Hocus Pocus 2 is officially moving forward on Disney's upcoming streaming
service. Oh, it's not a thing that's already been done.
No.
They're bringing it out.
They're
okay,
I
was like, when the fuck did they make a sequel to that movie?
No, yeah. No, it's something they're moving forward with for Disney Plus.
Dude, that Disney Plus thing is going to be a monstro.
Is it going to be like $20 like Netflix? Well, Netflix is only like 12.
I believe it's going to be like $14.
Yeah,
$13.99.
I don't know that I'm going to want it. Like,
well, what I would do personally is I would maybe like suspend a Netflix subscription for a little
just
bit
just to see,
and then crank through a lot of the Disney stuff and see what they got going on, because they got the Mandalorian coming out.
Well, I know Alia wants it for the Clone Wars and stuff like that, but yeah. I mean, there's not, I mean, is it going to be stuff like Alien and The Exorcist, like stuff that's under the Disney umbrella, or is it only going to be
Marvel,
like
the Marvel stuff will be in there?
Well, and they own 20th Century Fox now, also.
Well, that's what I mean. Like,
so I would say I probably not out of the gate, but.
But, like, do you think stuff like Alien will be on Disney?
They would be.
I would think so, yeah.
That's so weird. That's so fucking weird.
Yeah. Well, and Disney, well, soon enough, we'll see Disney reboot those franchises.
God, I hope not.
We will.
Can you imagine a Disney rebooted Exorcist?
Well, it's worth noting Disney owned Miramax at one time when Pulp Fiction came out.
Okay, so they made chick flicks like The Crying Game and The Piano.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, not under the Disney label, but they owned the
Miramax.
They were the parent company.
Yeah.
So if they keep the Fox moniker and like keep that, if they were smart, I mean, I don't want to see a PG-13 alien movie.
Fuck no.
No.
And I definitely don't want to see a PG-13 Exorcist.
Oh, absolutely not.
I don't know how the Conjuring movies are rated R.
But we've seen a PG-13 alien movie,
retarded.
And George likes it, and it's called Alien versus Predator.
I do like that movie.
I mean, like, what's not to like?
What is not to like, man? It's underground ice Mayan temples, fucking laser tunnel down. It's
not good.
It's fucking great. What's your problem?
Yeah.
And then AVP Requiem, get in my belly.
Get in my
no
pussy.
Way, dude. Oh, great.
Okay, wait a minute.
Before I get to the biggest news story I've heard in a while.
Oh.
The single... No, I'm exaggerating. But Sam Raimi, I guess, returning to horror for the first time since Drag Me to Hell. Did you guys like Drag Me to Hell?
I love Drag Me to Hell.
I liked that a lot. That was fucking... So hopefully it's a nice return to form. He also has selected a director for Evil Dead 4.
Yep. Which I heard that like Bruce Campbell was completely done with Evil Dead after Ash vs. the Evil Dead went tits up.
I would be okay with an Evil Dead movie that did not have Bruce Campbell in it.
Yeah, like it was okay a continuation with what's her name?
Or something. I don't know. But
from the Fede Alvarez one?
Yeah.
And like, why not just let Fede Alvarez do the next one? Like, he already did such a good job, unless Sam Raimi kind of wants to take it back to the silly comedic. Yeah.
This is a continuation of the other films, you know.
As long as we can wash the taste of Spider-Man out of our mouths.
Spider-Man
3. I'll take whatever.
Well, and Oz the Great and Powerful and fucking some other huge
not
thing
so good.
He did.
Not so good. It's like the Autist and Punisher of movies.
That's exactly what I want to get into. Have you seen the blue pumpkins? The blue jack-o'-lanterns?
Have you seen the blue waffles?
No.
Oh, you haven't seen blue waffles?
No, dude.
You should definitely Google that.
Blue pumpkins raising autism awareness on Halloween. So
I was like, raising autism?
Raising it. Raising the autism
Autist
level.
Razor. But freaking, so if you see this in front of a house, it means that their child, that there's an autist. Likewise, if they go to the door with a blue pail,
yeah,
it means that an autist is at your door. So be mindful.
So we need to get rid of blue pail.
Yeah, well,
a blue pail and a reflective vest.
Well, totally. And I think the blue ones, they look fucking cooler than the orange ones, don't you think? Or is it just because I'm biased?
Yeah, so
then what does it mean if you have a blue waffle?
That mean that you
gross.
Are an
I can't even. I can't even think about that and not get grossed out.
I mean, look at this picture. Look at that. The blue jack-o'-lantern.
I mean, it's pretty tight.
It isn't it fucking better?
Oh, it looks like that's in Slack, dude.
Yeah. So I just wondering when it causes all sorts of communication errors. Like, no, this just happens to be blue. I'm not an autist. You know, like you don't.
They open the door. There's a kid with a blue pail, and they just start screeching at him.
Yeah.
Wait, wouldn't it be the opposite?
Or no, imagine they screech at the kid with the blue pail and he just has one. He's like, I just like the color.
Do you think that's how autists communicate in screeches?
Yeah, isn't it?
That's a little myopic.
It's a little insensitive.
You're myopic.
Yeah, true. But wait.
I'm Irish.
Autists are myopic. They usually have a specified field they're really, you know, interested in. What? Hey, so here's the other thing.
Which one's yours?
There was actually an autistic kid that came to our table at the Horrorgasm, and I was talking to him for a while, him and his parents, about movies and stuff, and I was like, you know, one of our co-hosts is actually autistic, and like he's got the same...
You said that?
I was like, he's got the same enthusiasm that your son does about films.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. But the other thing that can happen
is... Be sure to tune into the Who Goes Our podcast.
How long before this is mandatory? Go.
The blue pumpkins?
Yeah, so I mean, let's say there's an autistic kid who isn't equipped.
Well, I mean,
he's
like,
got like get him a blue pumpkin now.
Okay, what's the point behind it? Like, would you treat an autistic kid any different if they're trick or treating at your house?
Okay, so serious answer?
Yeah, yes. Cuz I honestly don't know.
Because they're a little bit, they get overloaded by like high sensory stuff. So maybe like, you know, if an autistic kid was coming to your house, you wouldn't be like, you know.
Well,
I mean, but then you have to be spotting for blue pails. And like, if you have a blue pumpkin outside, what does that mean? Just don't like yell shit outside the door. I don't get the whole point behind this.
That's kind
of some of them are unable to speak, and they're certainly unable to say mechanical things over and over again like trick or treat. So they'll be at the door and they'll be having the blue pumpkin, and if the kids don't say anything, the people are like,
well,
are
fuck you, good? You. I'm not gonna like,
yeah,
not gonna give you candy.
And it's like, hey, give him some candy.
It's like, are you good?
Yeah.
Because like, he's got a blue pumpkin.
It's like, is he going to say the words or not?
That's the loophole right there. If you don't want to walk around saying trick or treat, you just walk around with a fucking blue pumpkin and just stare at people.
This could go all sorts of fucked up ways.
Yeah.
It could be like George Orwell's fucking blue pumpkin autist festival.
All right. You know what I mean? What would other color pumpkins be?
Well, there's one for, I know there's one for like nut allergy.
Okay.
Like.
Really?
Yeah. I know there's one for sure. Like it's a green pumpkin, I want to say, is like the nut allergy
okay.
one.
Okay. So blue is autistic, green is nut allergy.
Maybe. I'm not sure. But there is one that's like
a yellow pumpkin in your left hand means you like to be pissed on. A yellow pumpkin in your right hand means you like to do the pissing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Purple pumpkin, you like to be a bottom.
Okay. Yeah. Dark purple is power bottom.
Yeah. Power bottom. Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on the hand that you hold it in, yeah. too. Okay. Yeah.
And if you have like a handkerchief in your back right pocket, it's
yeah.
Yeah.
Something that, did I ever tell you about the time when I,
yes, you did.
Yeah.
Anything else? Riggedy Rhett?
No, that's it. I wanted to cap it off with the blue pumpkins for sure.
Oh, well, I had one more thing. If you like those adult coloring books called The Beauty of Horror, you know, where it's like the horror stuff, but it's intricate. They're making tarot cards called Beauty of Horror tarot cards, of course, and you can kickstart them, and they look really badass. It's really cool looking art. I mean, if you want a set of tarot cards, I've always kind of wanted one, and I'm bummed I didn't get the Binding of Isaac ones, but these look really, really great, and you can kickstart them.
Why does everything got to be kickstarted? Ooh. Just release a goddamn product that I can buy.
Speaking of, that does remind me of one more thing that I am going to buy. Owlman from the movie Lord of Tears is getting made into a Living Dead doll, and it looks
that's cool.
Fucking gorgeous. Dude, like, look at this. Look at this fucking thing. This thing is badass.
That is pretty
sick.
And
it's like 16 inches tall. I'm going to get that shit. It's from Mezco.
What is that from, Matt?
Lord of Tears. It looks awesome. Love. Dude, Lord of Tears and Horseface. Holy fuck. You would love, or Horsehead. Horsehead. You would love both of those movies. They're fucking great. Yeah. And they're super artsy. But this Owlman, you can order it, pre-order it online from Mezco, and it'll ship between May and July of next year. It's $46, 10 inches tall, 5 points of articulation, and it's fucking gorgeous. Those fucking claws alone, yeah, it looks dope. Dude.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back to talk about the motherfucking Lighthouse.
The Lighthouse.
Damn, Daniel.
Coming through with the white van.
Hey, Matthew.
Saw, dude.
Guess what, homie?
We're back.
We're totally back.
Fuck yeah.
I don't want to be the drunk girl at that party.
Why won't anyone fuck my pussy?
Speaking of fucking pussies, what's up with the Patreon, my dude?
Patreon.com/WhoGoesThere podcast is guaranteed to get you laid. Meaning, if you go on to Patreon.com/WhoGoesThere podcast and you donate to this show, one of us is totally willing to fuck you. Just saying. Your choice of which one. But in return, in addition to the D, you'll get exclusive content, bonus episodes, exclusive merchandise, including something that we're making special just for Patreon, just for this time of year. And we have exclusive episodes on Martyrs coming out. I think we have one for One Cut of the Dead coming out. All kinds of super fun stuff. And you get to help us continue doing the show that you, for some reason, listen to and we, for some reason, continue doing.
So if you don't want to be lame.
Yeah. And you want to get laid and you want to get into heaven and you want to be hella tight, go to patreon.com/WhoGoesThere podcast. And this, for some reason, isn't common sense, but like the more money you donate, the more tight you are.
It's like the more tickets you get into heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, some people want one ticket. King Sam wants all the tickets.
Yeah. King Sam's getting, you know, top level.
Yeah.
Penthouse.
He's got 72 virgins waiting. Why would you want virgins? Like, they wouldn't know what they're doing. He's got 72 just experienced enough individuals of different sexes and
also genders
and yeah,
ladies in their 60s that know exactly.
They don't even have to be ladies. They could be men.
Yep. He's got some shape shifting beings waiting for him. King Sam is set. Whatever he wants, his D will be very well taken care of.
Well, I mean, his D is probably already well taken care of.
Yeah.
You know. Hokie dokie. So the Who Goes There podcast watched 2019's The Lighthouse, directed by Robert Eggers, written by Max and Robert Eggers, starring Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson, and a very, attractive mermaid named Valeria Caraman. Huh? Matt Smith?
Yeah.
What'd you think of The Lighthouse, dude?
I mean, ultimately, I liked it. I feel like I'm missing something. And as a result of that, my wife and I got into a heated discussion, which is part of the reason why she's not here.
Okay.
The trailer doesn't really show anything, so to discuss...
What a coincidence. Neither does the movie.
Yeah, to discuss anything at all is basically spoiler. So even to discuss, like, the, you know, the themes of the movie is spoilery. I like it. I'm not sure I understand what's happening.
Okay. We can unpack that stuff. Riggedy Red, what'd you think of? Well, you know what? I'll skip you. I'm just kidding.
He's just like,
because I know what it's going to be. But
you don't know. You don't know.
Feverishly
masturbating. What'd you think of The Lighthouse, dude?
It needs a second watch.
Okay.
It needs a few watches.
I'm surprised you haven't watched it a few times.
I haven't. Because I was watching, I watched Parasite.
Yeah,
I watched
there was other shit going on.
In the last few days, we had The Lighthouse, then I watched Parasite, then I watched fucking Midsommar again, then I watched Blue Velvet. So I'm in disturbing artland.
You're
world.
In mindfuck yeah. heaven.
But
you're in the upside down right now.
This film is very labored over, meaning like Robert Eggers did a lot of research. Mm-hmm. It's very literary. There's a lot of like monologues, and there's research of how sailors spoke at this time, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of detail put into everything. It feels very, very labored over, to the point where
The homie Jen fucking info dumped me on some of the stuff that's related to the story, and I'll let you in on that stuff in a little bit.
Well, the thematic stuff too, and mythology, and they mentioned Prometheus.
Mention it. Like they basically. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, we can get into that.
Shorten it up.
But I thought the film is okay. Look, I could feel the audience feeling that it was slow. A little bit, because it is.
Yeah, intentionally though.
Intentionally,
yeah. But it's not poorly paced.
Oh fuck no! I do not think it's poorly paced at all. What I really admire it for, it's much more. Given that this is the guy who did The Witch, this is more art house than The Witch,
far and away.
By far. In fact, I thought you would hate this. Like, I thought this makes Midsommar look like Avatar.
I don't think it was more art house.
Let me just real quick. The way I feel about this movie is, I think that as an art piece, it is far more effective as an art piece than it is as a film. But that's not saying it's bad because of that, but I think that it's a standalone, like it has a lot of moments of art, and it's not a film, so to speak, with like a proper narrative and, you know, blah 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 blah.
See, if I was being like as basic as possible, I think that the best attributes of the film are the two performances.
Well, obviously.
And the cinematography.
Yeah. Well, the score too. Like
the score's fucking great.
It's phenomenal. Yeah.
That's everything, it's immaculately done. It really is. Robert Pattinson, I know everyone's Willem Dafoe is fantastic. Robert Pattinson though, a lot is asked of him in this fucking
movie. I couldn't quite figure out what his accent was.
It felt like it's
weaved in and out of a couple
things.
You know
what it is? It's that you've seen Gangs of New York, right?
Yeah.
It's that same accent that that Bill the Butcher sort of affects, because it kind of goes between
continental.
It goes between like accent. New York, Boston, and like New England.
Well, that's when sort of accents were solidifying themselves, so of course they were, you know, kind of accento.
There's a hodgepodge of cultures.
Yeah. There's Irish. On. There's a little bit of Irish brogue in there. There's a little bit of, you know, it's
brogue.
what? And I would love to see this movie with subtitles, because there are times when Willem Dafoe specifically.
So it's mumblecore.
Did both of you guys only watch it once?
Yes.
So the second time it's a lot easier to understand. I don't know why, but I didn't have as hard of a time understanding what was being said.
And the comparison,
because I watched it right before I came.
The comparison to The Witch, I think is
unnecessary.
It's unnecessary, because like in The Witch, you didn't necessarily need to know what they were saying to get the tone of it.
Right.
But I think in The Lighthouse, I I do believe that you miss a lot if you don't understand. Like that first prayer that he says, it's not even a prayer, but
well, he repeats it a few
sort
times.
Of the toast that yeah. he gives. If you miss some of the words, it's completely meaningless.
Right.
And I do think that second and third view will really do this movie.
I watched it a second time because after I got out of the first viewing, I was like, I have no fucking idea what happened. I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea what's real, what's not real. Was this up? Was this down? What's happening? I watched it again, and I basically had the same amount of understanding of what was going on. And that's kind of where Ollie and I got into this argument, you know? And like, I mean, it wasn't an argument. It was more of like a heated discussion. But, you know, like there's all the comparison to The Witch, and Robert Eggers even said that it's a companion piece, but only in the sense that like they both happen in like New England, and it's kind of like his interpretation of like New England folklore.
Well, the biggest thing thematically to me it has in common with The Witch is mankind, humans, trying to create bulwarks against nature and getting destroyed. Basically, in The Witch, it's like, yeah, the whole thing is, oh, the witch and the supernatural. It's the forest. It's the wilderness that destroys them. And they go at each other's throats because of the ambiguity and the overwhelming like isolation.
The isolation and the dread.
And the isolation and the dread, which is what puts them at each other's throats. It's like, and now the same thing in The Lighthouse. It's, you know, we set up this little tower, this phallic fucking tower with a light on it. And it's like, oh, don't worry, you're going to get home. You're going to get to the shore. That's what we got against these pounding fucking waves and like endless fucking rain and these fucking like these scavenger ass birds. And it, see what I'm, yeah. So that's the bigger theme there to me is our kind of like feeble attempts to fucking.
Yeah. Robert Eggers seems to want to explore isolation and loneliness and madness. I think that seems to be his sort of central.
And man versus nature.
That seems to be his central focus in really the testing of the human spirit.
Psychic. Yeah.
Okay. So now this movie,
we got it, dude.
Well, and this
figured out, dude. High five.
Well, see, this was the thing that Ollie and I were, you know, arguing about was I kept thinking I was missing something. Like there's some big, like underlying theme or there's like some kind of like metaphor that's going on. And Ollie thinks that it's just a straightforward face value movie where it's, and I think from this point, at least the thing I'm about to say is going to be spoilery, where it's just two people in isolation who don't like each other, who are descending into madness. And I kept thinking, there's got to be something else. There's supernatural elements here. There's stuff where, because for the second, and now, you know, I've given the spoiler warning. For the second viewing, I kept going into it thinking, one of them isn't real. One of them isn't actually there.
I have heard that theory where Winslow is the...
So Winslow is...
Robert Pattinson.
Okay.
I've heard that theory that Robert Pattinson's character is not there the entire time.
See, I thought...
And I don't think
that's important either
way. I thought
Defoe wasn't there the whole time.
The themes are the themes regardless of any literal thing. Like, for instance, were there actually mermaids? Was there actually a tentacled beast? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, see, well, that's the thing. And like, there's a lot of stuff like, what's real, what's not? Because there's like the mermaid stuff.
Well, okay.
What's real is the themes. Okay,
Back up one second. I think he's really trying to get like let's get to the actual plot of the movie.
Like
the plot and the. But it's not. I know. It doesn't matter for the overall theme of it.
Yeah.
But you're trying.
I'm trying to fully understand what's happening here to
the nitty gritty details of it.
Right. So, and all you saying that I'm trying to search for something else.
I would suggest taking it at face value that the two of them
but
are
there.
But
there's too much fuckery to just take the whole thing.
Well, they're fucking drunk. See, we're seeing things from unreliable narrators too. Like they're getting
okay.
Drunk.
See that's well that's
they're getting extremely fucking.
Okay.
Drunk.
Wait. Can I just dump my thought about?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So at the beginning of it, Robert Pattinson doesn't drink. The more he starts to drink, the more of an unreliable narrator Defoe becomes. And then there's times where they start having little things where you question if he's actually there. There's the scene where I guess Defoe starts gaslighting him where he's like, you were chasing me with the axe. You destroyed the boat.
And it reverses what so we saw as an audience.
It, yes, but in that scene where they're having that conversation, they're facing each other, and there are two leaks coming from the ceiling. One is falling directly on the left shoulder of Pattinson. One is falling directly on the left shoulder of Defoe. And I'm like, that can't just be coincidental. Like, is this saying that they are one? And then Pattinson goes into this story about how he watches this guy die, and he assumes his identity. Later on, and I would argue that it's when they get drunk, I thought if Defoe was real, he killed Defoe. He starts like then, like that's when he goes full into madness. Sure. And he starts then, that's when he says his name is Thomas. So he's got the same name as Defoe now. And then after they have the fight, he starts taking on like the sailor way of speaking. You know, he's like, come on, dog, that's a good dog, you know? And
yeah.
So I start thinking that there's some schizophrenia shit. There's some fuckery going
very,
on there.
That's very clear. I think in terms of the literal things happening, I do think that Defoe and Pattinson's characters are there in the beginning.
They may be questioning their own existence.
Where, are they both there the whole time?
Where I think the split happens, so to speak, is when Pattinson's character starts drinking. Because at that
starts drinking like right. from the first sip.
No. When he starts drinking alcohol,
when he starts sliding into alcoholic psychosis.
Yeah, I think that's when the
it's a real thing
for me. I think that's when the split happens. I think that we have then diverged into Pattinson's madness, so to speak. And so from then forward, Defoe's character, who knows what the fuck he's doing?
Well, see, I think. Well, I had the thought that he died that night that they got all drunk.
You think they got into
it? Not even that they got into it, just that he may have even died from like drinking too much and he's being old, because when they wake up, you know, Defoe is completely passed out. Pattinson is stumbling around. He goes to throw the shit out. And that's when everything kind of gets weird, is after that night they get drunk together. Then it's like, oh, well, we've been here for, you know, several weeks after our date, and you've been an alcoholic since you got here. Then I had this whole fucking like stolen identity thing where like Pattinson, like Defoe was never actually there. Pattinson just wanted this, you know, job, and he went down there and he found this abandoned lighthouse, which is why he can never get up there, because the thing is locked, and just like all this fuckery.
Yeah.
And then there's like, you know, the whole thing with the light, with Defoe being like super protective of it.
See, I think that's all theme stuff.
Yeah,
I'm trying to figure out the themes.
Okay. There's certain things I got while watching it. Besides going to the
boner,
but besides the mythology stuff, like okay, the first thing I'm thinking about is these guys are isolated, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But there's a boss and there's the employee. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a hierarchy, right? A hierarchy is kind of a natural thing that occurs a lot with fucking human beings. But how do you keep a hierarchy in line with two dudes, right? And how long is it going to hold? How long does it take before things go back to the natural order, which is physical dominance?
Well, a lot of this movie
right. It devolves into animalistic.
Well, yeah, and it's instincts. All power structures and like what we as men feel like we deserve as men and how we should be treated.
Fucking man games.
And that's why the lighthouse is a giant boner.
A shitload of phallic imagery. There's that little pump with the fucking black splooge coming out. It looks like fucking Willem Dafoe's up there having fucking sexual ecstasy with the lighthouse.
And he might He might have been. Like, I think that Defoe's love affair with the lighthouse, so to speak, is obviously symbolic for his innate, you know, homosexuality and you know, like,
well, you shouldn't say obvious, because I don't know if that's the thing. There was latent homosexual stuff with both of them.
So Arya said that, and I didn't get it. Like, I mean, there was the scene where
they were going to embrace.
Okay, so there was that one scene.
They can't do that. Guys can't do that.
Even before that, when he's fixing the shingles. Uh-huh. He's straight up checking out Willem Dafoe's ass.
Well, he was like, I didn't think he was checking out his ass. It looked like Willem Dafoe was like dry humping the bed.
Yeah.
I thought there was a weird thing going on.
Because they're isolated. Weird things happen to guys who aren't homosexual in isolation. Well,
and see, that's the thing, is the part where they almost embrace, is that like due to built up latent homosexuality, or is that difference? Because, well, or no, just isolation, you know, and just like the desire to touch any human being.
Yeah, it's a desire for affection,
I think. Yeah, that's the thing with Eggers. I think the ambiguity with some of this stuff is intentional. I think he wants it to be interpreted. I think it lends itself to multiple interpretations. And I think the idea is to start discussing this kind of stuff. But it's this is clear to me. Like, when two guys are about to embrace each other and almost kiss, they can't do that. But what they can do is start fucking boxing. They can
fight. Yeah.
But then they box, and so that's how they can go skin to skin, because that's acceptable. So even with none of the other dudes around, like, they've carried this norm so much that they can't fucking do this, but they can fight each other.
And
and then they end up cuddling again anyway.
And I got the feeling too that Winslow's character, you know, he goes into that story about, like, he killed the dude. Well, he didn't kill the dude.
He
watched him die. I kind of got the feeling that those two guys had like a thing going on,
like a sex thing,
like a sexual thing, maybe like a repressed relationship that they weren't able to express, because, you know, it is fucking like colonial time, you know, and just letting him die was easier than coming out as gay for him. And so he's got this guilt about letting this guy die,
identity
and
issues.
he's escaping to another situation where he has to deal with being in close proximity with another male dominant figure for him.
There's a lot going on.
And that's what drives him to the drink.
All of this stuff is this is a film, really, the more you look into it, the story and the themes are inseparable. That's what when I call it literary, it's like a fucking book.
Yeah, it's almost like a poem, I think.
Yeah, you know, this is very lyrical.
You mean almost like The Odyssey? Because it's very like, okay, was Willem Dafoe Proteus?
Prometheus?
No, Proteus. Oh,
Proteus.
Proteus is the old sailor in mythology.
Well, he's
right?
A shapeshifter, too. You know, like, because, yeah, like, think about it. Like, you see Dafoe up in the lighthouse where he's got like that big tentacle thing. Yeah. And then Robert Pattinson sees, who I'm assuming is Thomas, like his old, or not Thomas, Ephraim, his old lover.
Yeah.
That you're saying, you know, and then he changes into the mermaid, and then like,
and Prometheus stole fire, right? So he's stealing the light.
Yeah, Pattinson is Prometheus, which is why he can't follow the structure and the rules. So the gods cast him out,
and Prometheus and the
birds
ends up
literally
fucking
eat his fucking intestines.
Right. Now here's the thing too: when people hear this kind of shit, it's like, okay, so it academically references mythology. I think the point's lost on people that it's not meant to, it's not academic.
Yeah.
The reason the myth itself has a meaning, and the meaning is all the other stuff we're talking about.
Roll and shut your mouth.
And I also, well, exactly.
I also
there's
got
a
the
natural
feeling,
order that flows out.
And
of
like
the,
when, so
like the this fact, whole like it's bad luck to kill a seabird. It's like, okay, that's not just superstition. It's like, this is their territory.
Well, because it's the souls of you know, sailors, which is why it kind of lends credence to the whole Greek mythology thing. And like, he didn't follow his role, and so the gods cast him aside.
And Dafoe I also got the feeling at first that it was, I don't know if you guys are familiar with The Tempest. But I almost
Shakespeare.
I was almost getting the feeling that it was like a retelling of The Tempest with, like, you know, Greek mythology sort of mixed in, because you know, it's obvious, you know, the sea is the foe, right?
Well, there's archetypal stuff that shows up in a few different stories. Yeah,
it's
here's the light. Okay, you know how he finally gets spoiler, but he wants access to the lighthouse, because that's the thing he can't have, right? That's the he doesn't have the keys. Like, this is blatant. Like, it's just as viable in modern day, like, that part, because the lighthouse, to me, it signifies it's the level, like, you're at the top level now, like, you have the keys to get up here. And it's this dream everyone has, like,
reaching
someday
the top of
you'll
the
be in charge.
Right.
Yeah. You'll be in charge and get access to the light. And he gets up there and he fucking opens this thing and it fucking nearly burns him to a fucking crisp.
Yeah.
And it's to me, it's this like, it's a big
it's basically
hype.
You got to the top of the
it's
mountain.
It's all fucking hype. Well, it's like Icarus at
that
point.
It was like you got to the top of the mountain before you could actually like handle being at the top of the mountain.
Absolutely.
And it chewed you up and spit you out.
If you don't go in the necessary sequence, absolutely. Because Dafoe knows how to get up there and like
he hasn't earned it yet.
Dafoe knows how to get up there and like hang out with the fucking light and jack off.
Well,
like,
he's essentially
Pattinson's
the god
like,
of
no,
the
I
island.
Want it all in the face. Like, give it all to me right now. Yeah. It's like, nah, dude.
So did Dafoe actually kill his see there's so much stuff that I don't get. Like, did Dafoe actually kill his second? Did his second actually go mad and die somehow? Like, does Pattinson actually find a head in the lobster trap? Like, there's so much stuff in here, and like all the mermaid stuff, like, and what was the significance of the gull in the on cistern it?
Well,
and the
our
gull wasn't dead
he
and,
can't
like,
discern if it's there or not, so as an audience we're placed in his in that kind of precarious, that ambiguity again. We don't, he doesn't know.
Yeah. Honestly, from my viewing, I think that all of the supernatural stuff is all just sea madness.
I think so too. Madness is scary enough. Well, it's not that it's scary enough. It's the same result.
It's enough.
We talked about Hereditary. Like when we talked about Hereditary, like my first episode with you guys over a year ago and whatnot, it was like, even if you took out all the fucking supernatural elements, all the other shit going on is the scary part.
Yeah.
It's the human shit.
No, see, that's a funny thing is because I've like heard some reviews and read some reviews where people are saying that like this is it's a really tense movie and it's like builds up like a lot of like dread, and I didn't feel any of that. And Alia said, well, it's, you know, a character study. So like that's the whole thing, is it's all about like the characters and like their relationship together. And like, so I started having the question, like, is this a horror film? And there's a lot of people who are like, oh, it's such a horror film, you know, and I would say just by some of the imagery it is. And
shit, man, for me, it's, well, more of a dark comedy with some horrors dripped in.
Well, see, and if Lovecraft, I mean, this is very, very Lovecraftian, you know, it's like there's all the tentacle stuff. There's like, you know, the talks of the gods, you know, in the seas, and there's all this other shit. And it
I was wondering that myself for the first, maybe two thirds or maybe half.
If it was a Cthulhu thing,
if it was a horror film, by the time we get an axe to the head, and then we get fucking tentacles, and then we get guys fucking birds eating people's entrails, like this, and then we get all the nightmare imagery.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, this is horror. This basically, I mean, gosh, I don't want to say things prematurely. That's why I want to watch it more. But this is a film that kind of turns the horror genre on its fucking head.
You know what? It almost felt to me like a more accessible Antichrist. You know, where
Lars von Trier type deal,
yeah, like a Lars von Trier,
just because Defoe got naked.
No,
it's in his contract to get naked.
No, I just mean from the aspect of it. You know, and Rhett said it earlier, it doesn't matter what happens literally. What matters is sort of the takeaway that you get from it in terms of like your,
how are you interpreting it,
your perception of
what are you carrying to it
of the theme,
yeah.
And because, yeah, dude,
What you take with you to the movie.
At its base, it's two dudes having to deal with a fucking foghorn going off every 4 minutes and having to sleep during the day and being up all hours of the night and having to deal with the isolation and you know, wanting human contact. And yeah, literally, that's what it's about.
You know, it's good that you mentioned the foghorn, because at the beginning, it's so prevalent. It's so there all the time. It's
ominous
and
as fuck.
And you don't really notice when it stops. But like,
that's true.
Like we said in The Witch, like the score is almost like its own character in this movie, which it totally is. Like it's so seamless where you feel really tense when you need to, but there's like almost nothing when it needs to be just chill. But I would argue that the use of light itself is an even bigger character. There's times where, because all of the light is very deliberate in this, it's all candlelight, it's all, you know, just natural light coming sparsely through windows.
Contours of fucking Defoe's face,
dude. That's my favorite scene, is when he, like, you know, after he finds out homeboy doesn't like his cooking, and he has that like, damn you, like that whole speech, and his face is just lit up. He looks like a skeleton.
Why'd you spill your beans?
Well, and that led me more to my like, oh, he's fucking dead. That's why the shadows are painting him like a skeleton here. You know, like he died at this event.
The morbidity.
And now, like, so if, in my head canon, if that night they drank on the last, head canon, dude? Yeah, dude, big old dummy blast.
What do you do with it, dude?
So that night they drank their last night in town, their last night on the rock. If Defoe died and Pattinson missed the boat, it would make sense that he starts hallucinating that he's still there, like that Defoe is still there,
yeah,
even though he's dead. He starts imagining things. Shit starts going haywire. He starts drinking more. His provisions are then gone. And I kind of forgot where I was going with this point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that does... Oh, you know, it would make sense that everything starts to fall apart after that, because Defoe is no longer there to kind of steer the ship, as it were. So
Pattinson
is just
the only reason clueless. I don't like that is because at some point he digs up that box of booze And
okay,
if Pattinson was there. You know, if Pattinson hasn't been there for a long time, or Willem Dafoe isn't there, then the fucking sea madness can continue. You know what I mean? Like the alcohol is sort of the catalyst for the sea madness.
Alcohol is fucking gasoline on the fire, dude. For sure.
Yeah.
Nothing good happens, and then
they literally start drinking gasoline at some point. You know, they're fucking
ethanol. They fucking get the pure extract.
That scene too kind of leads credence to Pattinson not actually
being
there.
They could both but be fucking dead at that point, well, it's just madness.
All cognitive distortion.
Well, when they first taste it, Pattinson just takes it and just doesn't even flinch, but like Dafoe, who's the seasoned alcoholic, is like, "Oh, like that's fucking gnarly." Yeah. But Pattinson is just like, "Whatever, dude. This is all good."
Speaking of which, I loved those fucking scenes though, where cuz it does spend a lot of quiet time and like you said it didn't For you, it didn't build much tension, but it does spend a lot of time building atmosphere at the very least.
Yeah.
But then when it gets to like a fever pitch with parts of intensity, like when they get drunk and they sing in those fucking songs and you're like, oh, this is where fucking super abrasive music came from. I get it.
Oh, you're like, oh, now I'm in.
Yeah. Well, for sure. And then you mentioned Defoe's scene earlier where he has that long like monologue where his face is all lit up. Then Pattinson gets his later on. He has a long fucking speech he gives him.
Yeah.
And he's like, you have a way with words.
When
he
finally tells a story.
But he becomes completely unhinged in certain scenes in this. Pattinson, like that part where he's masturbating and see, that part was very powerful to me because it shows like how desperate the male psyche does get. Yeah. I mean, yes, he's isolated in a lighthouse. But it's a way to dramatize like how much control the feminine ideal has over the male psyche right there. Because I mean, you remember when he climaxes, he lets out this like desperate fucking like. Yeah. it's like wow, damn dude.
It's almost you almost get a like a wartime vibe from it because like you know you do. You understand the desperation that he's just like, I just got to fucking come. Like, I can't, like, there's nothing else matters at that point except for the
release.
The body
has complete control.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, like.
And I don't think that's uniquely a male thing.
It's not uniquely a male thing. And it's not uniquely an isolated on a lighthouse thing.
Right.
That's.
right.
No. Yeah. That's definitely good to qualify.
Yeah.
It's an existential thing, dude.
Well, I mean, yeah,
it's got all those fucking.
If existential dread is your bread and butter, like, you know.
This has got it.
Yeah, but where does that leave people who don't think about that stuff at all?
They do think about it. No, I don't. Well, they think of it as paying your bills. That's existential dread. But it's just that it's just the surface. It's the icing version of it. It's the same shit. Yeah, it's survival.
It's the same thing. I mean, just because you in your head, you're like, I'm not existentially dreading paying my bills. You're still every day. You got to go to work, and you got to fill your car up with gas.
Ticking, and you're getting closer to death every fucking second.
Yeah, man.
And
I don't ever think about that.
No. There's a part of you don't think about it.
No, I don't.
That means my there's part of doesn't. You that's always thinking about it, and it's on the lower part of the lighthouse.
My psyche is just like
it's a fucking crashing storm on your lower. You're living in the top of the lighthouse.
Yeah,
lighthouse is much bigger than the top.
It's nice up here. I'm the god of this island.
That's what I'm saying.
Further the lighthouse theme, I was also, and again, I know I'm a fucking skipping record, but I was getting some really, really strong Dark Tower vibes with this. and what I mean is that, like, you know, Robert Pattinson at some point, like he's got this desperation to reach the top of the lighthouse.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately it's fruitless, right? Because, you know, what's the point of him being up there other than to get burned alive by this fucking light?
Well, and what does it matter that you surmounted the hierarchy when you killed the other dude? Like, the hierarchy is automatically...
It's dead.
It doesn't... Yeah. None of it... It's all illusion. Like... And that's a good point philosophically. All the man games we're playing, it's like you take the other competitors out and this is all nothing. It's just, you get what I mean? You're reduced, you're alone.
Then you're eating seagulls by yourself.
Then you're fucking eating seagulls.
So he didn't weaponize his trauma.
He did not. Well, he tried to. He tried to weaponize the trauma. You know who weaponized their trauma? It was the fucking seagulls. The
seagull did.
The seagull just the seagulls were a bunch of fucking trolling dicks. Like when he finds he goes out there and he's like, oh man, our fucking water's
it was very Poe.
The whole thing was very
Poe. I've also read some things that were like, you know, it's an allegory of, you know, akin to Heart of Darkness and whatnot,
right, Joseph Conrad.
Yeah.
Sure. So, see, that's a good pedigree. This fucking guy, you know, he's got Conrad, he's got Lovecraft.
Yeah, man.
He's got Poe.
See, and I don't even the Lovecraft stuff.
Dude, existential dread, the descent into madness, no, tentacled creatures.
Yeah, but I think it's
the cosmic D.
I think it's far more Greek tragedy than it is Lovecraftian horror.
It's definitely more.
The only way I'd say it's Lovecraftian is because Lovecraft's universe was one where nature was completely indifferent to mankind's well-being. Get what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that Lovecraft had a genuine philosophy. Regardless of being a fiction writer, he believed that the universe we occupied was completely indifferent to our well-being.
Yeah.
It's not like, exactly.
The universe doesn't give a fuck about us.
That was kind of a new, that's not a romantic, like a lot of romantic gothic horror doesn't entertain things that way.
Yeah.
He was kind of like, it's very cold and it's very... Well, that's where it becomes existential again.
Yeah. And by stark contrast, you know, like Greek mythology and Greek tragedy is very emotional, and the gods are very invested in, you know, the humans' goings on. You know, and so much that, like, you know, you got Willem Dafoe.
You can bring both lenses to it.
You got Willem Dafoe as like a Poseidon character in at some point.
He was more Proteus, but
well, no. When he's literally got like the crown of the fucking
That was Proteus, half man, half octopus.
No, dude, no.
When he's getting his ass beat.
Yeah,
we're pretty close here.
I think that was more of a Poseidon reference.
Poseidon wasn't a shapeshifter.
All of the gods were shapeshifters. What you talking about, homie?
I mean, I guess you're right.
What do you mean, I guess? I'm literally right.
I mean, but they didn't have a... They didn't really get off on it. Like, not all of them.
That's how they... That's all of the problems of Greek tragedy is gods fucking humans.
I found a nifty article midweek about the mythological
Hades
references.
Trying to fuck some preteen, and then he sticks her down in hell for 6 months out of the year.
That's what you get for eating pomegranates.
Well, this is Robert Eggers himself. He says, well, Prometheus and Proteus never hung out in any Greek myth before, but that seems to be what is kind of happening here. And Prometheus might be taking on some characteristics that he hasn't in the past, like in past mythology.
Right.
But then Eggers says, but you know what? The classical authors did that all the time, meaning they mashed up characters all the time. They had the character, the depiction of the gods changed.
You mean like comic book crossovers?
Just like, it's exactly the same thing. Depending who's writing the story, you may see differences in the way they behave. And then he's like, okay, Proteus and Prometheus never talked in old mythology. But if I take the essence of what they represent thematically and put them as fucking human dudes, now I can tell this mythological story.
Right. Yeah, it's like in high school
with elements from all of them.
You guys like run in like, you know, different circles in high school, but like you could easily run into each other.
Yeah, you could unite the colonies, dude.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, it's like when you're when you're thinking back on a memory, a lot of times what happens is you morph people together. And sometimes
Game of Thrones did.
Yeah, something akin to that.
It's all like a deep fake, dude.
It's a Greek tragedy deep fake.
It's a Greek fake.
There's one point where Pattinson turns around and sees himself. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
There's a doppelganger part.
Yeah, where he...
That was extremely unsettling to me how that was played, too.
Like, see, dude, that's why I think that Dafoe wasn't, like, just a regular dude.
So Jen from Instagram sent me this message earlier that, let's see... I saw an interview about what he based a lighthouse on, and it's called the Small's Lighthouse Tragedy.
Yeah.
Tragedy. Two lighthouse keepers, both named Thomas, old, one younger, and the younger one went crazy.
That's not entirely true. It was three people. One of them was named Thomas. They all disappeared. It was like the same thing where the, not rescue vessel, but like their relief came to pick them up, and they were all three
gone. They were all dead.
Well, they were all three gone. Like, they just never found them at all. So the speculation is that like the three of them went mad, had a fight like near the cliffs, and they fell into the sea and drowned because they were never found ever. So unless aliens fucking took them, or, you know, they just fucking yeeted out of there.
They went and back to Davy Jones's locker.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And like, why would the fucking... That, see, that's the thing I don't get about this movie, is why would their relief just dip? And who were those people at the very beginning? Like when Robert Pattinson, because it seemed
the
like
previous ship.
Right? Yeah. Well, okay. Ship. So, but it seemed like Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe showed up at the same time, right?
Yeah. So the way I understand it is that lighthouse keepers, you don't want to do that job for more than, you know, 6-8 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
You do it in shifts. So, you know, two dudes come off, two dudes come on.
Well, and that says everything right there. Like, why?
Because you'll go fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Well, see, but I mean,
you'll get the space madness.
Okay, see, but this doesn't like really make sense, because if the two of them came to the lighthouse,
it doesn't matter if it makes sense. That's how it happens.
No, but it needs to fucking make sense.
He's the thing is,
because like, hold on, if the two of them show up,
you're a very linear guy.
If the two of them show up at the lighthouse together, they were on that boat together, so they would have had time like getting to know each other. But when they show up, it's very much like they have no idea who each other are. They don't know anything about each other.
But Robert Pattinson himself says, "I'm not much of a talker." And so, of course, he's going to isolate himself on the boat.
Yeah, but when introverted. Defoe definitely didn't take that as an option. He's like, well, you think you're the first? Like, too bad. Fucking talk.
And depending on what kind of ship it is, they may be working opposite ends of it. Like, William Defoe may be a fucking...
That was a small ship they came up on. It almost looked like a fucking rowboat.
Of course it was a rowboat. It's a cliff. They came from a bigger ship.
Their whole interaction, like, regardless that, you know, we live in 2019.
In
a society. They lived in that time in a society. The generation gap.
1890.
Still fuck. Okay, yeah. I was going to say turn of the 20th century, so that's about right. And then that generation gap is apparent. It always has been. Like the way, like it doesn't matter like what toys we have now. Like there's the younger dude and the older dude, and the way they're interacting, like it felt so timeless. Part of it, not the way they're talking with their accents, but the just the interaction between them. They're just the complete difference of, because he's not much of a talker, but also he's like, you can tell with attitudes about life, they're not going to fucking match up. They're a completely different paradigm of life.
And also, Matthew, I don't know if you caught it, but when I say Matthew, whenever I'm like, excuse me.
I was thinking earlier how cute that is. You're like, Matthew. You also say it when you want him to be careful.
He does it.
You're like, Matthew, that's go true. Home and take care of yourself.
No, he's like, Matthew, dude, that knife is sharp. Do not touch it.
Yeah. You're a Libra, right?
He also says that when he's gonna placate me.
No, I'm not placating. Do you remember when Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson they passed the other crew?
Yeah, and they don't say a word. See, that's my problem too.
So like, here's my thinking on that is I think that those guys that are coming off, dude, they're so done with human, like, you know, they're so done with being around some fucker for 6 weeks.
And you wouldn't be excited to see two new people and just be like, oh, thank God you guys are here. That shit is
but
all
they
yours.
Know, but they know what they're about to get into. So like, you know, it's they're all in their desolation together. Like we're all fucked together.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, that scene felt really weird to me. Like I figured there would have been some interaction. There would have been something. And with Defoe's second in line being dead, like, at what point did he die? Did he die? Because I got the impression that he died at this lighthouse, because Pattinson then finds the head in the lobster trap at the lighthouse. So did his second in command die 4 weeks ago when he was there previously? And that's why Pattinson is here now. Like there's things that don't line up for me. And I know you guys keep saying it doesn't matter because it's the themes and it's this and it's that.
Right.
And it's like there's
no harm in thinking about it. Like, I mean, you know.
Well, and that's the thing is this narrative is one of those movies that's like open to interpretation on a lot of aspects of it. It's like, okay, well, we have this, you know, pretty straightforward theme that we're trying to convey, you know, like the power struggle and the hierarchy and all that. And like you can throw in all the Greek myth shit. But there's stuff that just doesn't make sense unless it's all just
cognitive distortion.
Figments of imagination and psychosis and all this other shit. And then at that point, then like you can't trust anything. And if you can't trust anything, then like how can you know how you feel about the movie if you don't even know what the fuck happened?
Well, you can't trust your perceptions in general.
You basically feel that if it's all madness, then what's the point?
Well, it's not just just to clarify, things don't need to be all madness for you to not be able to trust your perception. Your perceptions are incomplete.
Well, but I think what Matt's trying to get to is that like, well, if the mermaids didn't matter and the head in the bucket didn't matter and you know, what's the point?
Yeah, it's. Yeah. I mean,
I see where you're coming from, man.
It's not even like what's the point. It's like what is this stuff? And if it does, if that doesn't matter, why should I care?
Perception
and
like, implies plural. Like, there's not one perception.
Yeah,
there's multiple. That's why it's perception.
Yeah.
So I know you're like whatever, but I get what you're saying. Why should I care if I can't pin down like what the fuck exactly is going on?
Yeah.
But that's kind of That's kind of the doorway to nihilism in this. Again, that's up to you.
I mean, I'm pretty fucking nihilistic.
Well, no, it's saying, do you want to make it nihilistic or do you want to give it a mythological stance or do you want to give it this one?
I don't want to make it nihilistic. I just want to understand it. And this is kind of the discussion Ollie and I were having is that she thinks it's very face value. And I think that there's like something bigger that's happening that I'm not seeing, that there's like something that makes the mermaid make sense, that makes Willem Dafoe being naked make sense, that makes
the mermaid is just the frustrated sexual stuff.
Truthfully, neither of you are wrong and neither of you are right.
I think that's the point.
And that does it. The thing is that I think you could get caught up. You could get caught up and get into a fucking fight with your wife because you're like, well, no, it has to mean something. And on her end, she's like, well, no, it fucking doesn't mean anything. So I do think that you kind of get into the trap of trying to suss out meaning from all of these little threads when in truth, it's like anything that we do in our fucking lives. Like, does it matter that I raise my children to be, you know, a better person than I was? Like, not fucking really.
No.
Because
even if your kids are good, everybody else raises their kids to be little fuckers.
But the idea would be to, you know, to suss out some meaning and to be able to figure out like, hey, like, okay, the movie doesn't necessarily stand up from a narrative standpoint, but that's okay because the idea is that you're learning that isolation and a desolate backdrop and the lack of human contact, all of this, it's ultimately like it's ultimately like a failing game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's I don't know. Like, I've seen it twice now, and both times I walked out of it, and I was like, I mean, I like the movie, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like,
I can see that.
I mean, aside from the obvious of like the amazing performances turned by, right? You know, the cinematography, like all of that surface level stuff. Like, I don't know why I like the actual movie.
I think because it might have the ending is what makes it or breaks it for people. I would imagine when they see him fucking washed up on the shore or whatever, and the birds are eating his fucking entrails. That thing, that last shot, that is such a ballsy fucking idea. What he did there
when the bird shit on his chest.
Yeah, it has stuck with me for days. Like, it really has, and so why I like this fucking. I mean, not just because the ending, but
the gnarliest thing about that scene is it's like a moving painting. Like,
his eyes are all pecked out.
Well, even
that's a
part where Defoe's naked with the light coming out of his face, that actually is a painting.
Well, and that's the thing, too. Like, when we talk about horror as a genre, dude, Eggers is like, horror a genre? Like, dude.
give it to me all.
He's all mythology, bitch. Yeah, like, before the word horror existed, there was horror. Like, this motherfucker had his entrails pecked out for stealing fire and fucking, then his eyes were fucking pecked out. You know what I mean? It's like, this horror, the idea of what constitutes
was
horror.
Liver.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it grew back every day.
I don't want to get into cement.
Well, see, and I mean, like, okay, so I get...
Bullshit.
I get the imagery... Of that scene, you know, with it being Prometheus and you know, his punishment with the birds and all that. The thing that I don't understand is when he looks at the light and he gets all like hysterical, which see, to me, everything just keeps going back to like either Dafoe not being real or Dafoe dying at some point. Because, you know, like when you start to get like hypothermia, you kind of freak out and your natural reaction is to take off all of your clothes.
Right,
so when he goes up to, you know, the light and he looks into the light and then he gets yeeted down the stairs.
He does get yeeted.
How does he wind up outside? So to me, I start thinking like, okay, he sees this light that furthers his psychosis, but it doesn't matter because Defoe is dead. His rations are gone. He's there on this rock by himself. He starts to get kind of crazy. He gets naked and he crawls out like onto the rocks. And that's just where he eventually, his body fails him, is there on the rocks. Like otherwise, the light itself is actually like an entity of, or some kind of god, which is then punishing him for not following the hierarchy and the rules and takes his clothes off.
I don't think the light is necessarily the deity. I think the light is
it could be.
Because there's definitely something there. He goes up there and the little door opened on its own.
It accepts him.
Yeah. I mean, well, it revealed itself, whatever it is, you know, and the light, like I refuse to believe the light is just a light. Like the light is something. Eggers,
they asked in the same interview, they said, why did you make the decision not to show the audience what was in?
He's in like, the light. You ever Pulp Fiction, bitch?
Well, exactly. But he said, if we showed the audience what was in the light, the same fate would have befallen you. That befalls.
Oh, well, that's silly. Like I
it's
thought not of
it. Because he's leaving it. He's saying like it's like it you know, put whatever you want in the space.
I thought of it more as a Bird Box thing, where like nothing they could actually show you would be as impactful as like what you think in your own brain.
Well, of course,
because like Bird Box, if they would have shown you the monster, like especially that fucking weird baby snake they designed, you would have been like, oh, well, that's fucking dumb.
Again, but I think it's that his motivation is more important than what it is. The motivation, we know he wants to, he needs that, he needs to get to that fucking light.
You know what?
Well, but is it because he needs it, or is it because Defoe covets it so much?
That's
why.
That's what I'm, yeah, it's the fucking, he couldn't go up there.
This is going to sound really.
Is that like an Oedipus complex where like he essentially is trying to fuck his mother and the light is his mother and Defoe is actually his father? Is that like a thing
could,
that's happening?
I mean, it
there?
Could be.
Fucking read that in
you
there
know,
too.
You know what, dude? I will
it's
say.
It's the unattainable.
I will say this.
He did say he would
it's
fuck.
It's the forbidden fruit.
He did say he would fuck. Fuck a steak, shit. Which was weird.
I'd fuck a steak too.
Just
after.
Came out of nowhere.
Who doesn't want to like leapfrog the fucking the hierarchy and to get what with the, where they're you know they want to get
steak.
There. I want it now. I want instant steak. Gratification. I want to fuck the steak. What?
I will say this. You know the movie.
That's
had,
a shirt
the
right
movie
there
had me
sell.
So in, you know I was so engaged in the film that at one point I thought that if I actually saw what the light was, so to speak, that I might. Like I might actually go a little crazy because it was like we've been sitting in this movie for fucking 2 hours or, you know, hour and a half. And when you find, you know, he's finally going up these stairs and you're like, he's doing it. He's going to get fucked by a mermaid. Like I was like, yeah, boy. And then, you know, he does that overmodulated scream thing. And I was like, don't pan to the light because I might lose it.
Yeah.
It was really well done. That whole scene was like pure fucking madness and gold. Loved it.
Yep.
Madness and gold?
It's madness, comma, and gold.
It's all fucking showing the preview for the movie and it says pure madness and gold. Jorge Gonzalez, who goes their podcast.
Yeah, right?
Pure madness and gold.
We only have one fucking film credit.
That's true, but at least it was for the headhunter. That's tight as fuck.
It is tight.
That is pretty tight.
Yeah, I had a point I was going to make, and of course all my points are good points, so it's a tragedy that
I know how that feels
what it
too.
Was.
Mm-hmm. When I lose my point, it's like the fucking earth is going to spin off its axis. We're all going to fly, hurling into the fucking sun.
When I lose my point, I just kind of sit there and flop it sadly.
Oh, bitch. I feel like we haven't said enough lewd, ridiculous shit this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie doesn't really lend itself to lewd, ridiculous shit.
It does, though. Except for it kind of does, dude. There's fucking...
It's the most splooch-tastic film ever.
I think he says the word jism four times, and I was like, yeah!
I heard jism once.
It, like, kills jism. It's and like, oh, okay.
I didn't think that was jizz, like, when he was standing underneath... You know, the great, like,
I do.
No, it's
I thought that, well, no, dude, because that, I mean, that was a big low.
He's been edging.
I mean, but it like that would have meant it would have just had to come out like a polyphemous tear where it's just blittle. It wasn't because it like dribbled it first.
Pattinson got them all fucking horny.
It dribbled it first, and then it was just like a sploot. And I figured that was just like I thought that was Defoe like shape shifting into something because then you do see that big fucking octopus tentacle.
I thought, dude, to be honest with you, I thought he was fucking the tentacle. I thought he was.
It does have good suction.
I thought there was like a fucking squid vagina up there, and I was.
I mean,
like,
there was a fish pussy, like,
and I was like, "Oh, dude, the goal is to fuck the squid."
So this is like this gives you like some good insight into the top half, bottom half mermaid thing.
Top half mermaid, because
it's
way.
Like, yo, if they got that working up, I mean, that was a hot dog down a hallway situation there, like. If I would have got in there, the mermaid would have been like, are you in yet? And I would have been like, bitch, I'm done.
What if it just narrows down really sharply? You know. All right, well, let's wrap it up with the lighthouse.
Fuck.
Do you feel like talking about... See, the thing is with movies like this, I always feel like talking about it like can sometimes make me feel more positive.
I feel like it could go either way. I mean, because I was getting more positive on it, but then like my questions are still unanswered.
I need to see the film again.
Yep.
Like, obviously, but
hunt it.
As it is right now, it's a film I respect more than I like. But, I mean, seriously, that wasn't something I actually anticipated. For me, I like doing this because, again, this is a good year. I think last year was a good year for horror movies. I think this year is a good year for horror movies, particularly these kind of like, well... I don't want to use that. I don't like that term.
Elevated horror.
I don't like that. I mean, I think the genre is expanding in all sorts of directions. I mean, you've got a resurgence of slasher stuff with stuff like Terrifier.
Yeah.
You've got like fucking psychedelic horror stuff with stuff like Mandy. You've got like the Shudder original stuff. You got the creature features. Some of them were pretty fucking solid. You've got these fucking art house inflected ones like Midsommar and Hereditary and The Witch and The Lighthouse. So I think it's a good time in general for horror. You've got the topical ones mm-hmm. like Parasite, mm-hmm. like Us, like fucking Get Out. You could even read topical stuff into this.
Oh, man. Along these same lines, not the same movie, but you should check out We Are the Flesh. That's a fucking... That's... You want to talk about weird, like...
Does it go the full D?
Dude, it goes...
It goes the full D, the full V. It's a good one. It's a Spanish language film. It's real good.
Okay.
Somos la carne.
Because, I'm not a sports guy, but this is where I get, like, sports about it. You remember I was talking last week... Eggers' sophomore effort, Jordan Peele's sophomore effort with Us, and Ari Aster's with Midsommar.
Yeah.
What's your ranking this year for the
Well,
three?
You're right. You're not a sports guy.
No.
Nothing to do with sports.
No, what I mean is I like ranking. I like doing that. I like follow the guy. I follow the directors, like people follow the players.
I still think that these two films, The Witch and The Lighthouse, are... I mean, I know the guy's only been directing... for a little bit, but he is far and away more talented than Jordan Peele, like in terms of like directing and filmmaking.
See,
and
what would your ranking be? So you like,
well, it depends on what, it depends year. On what you're looking for though.
For your favorites. No, I'm not even saying best
of those six movies.
No. I'm saying this year of the sophomore efforts of three new auteurs,
Ari Aster, Jordan Peele. And so we're talking about just how we feel like the movies.
Yeah, in what general? you're like, for instance, I personally think The Lighthouse is probably a tighter film than Midsommar. I prefer Midsommar.
I would probably go so Lighthouse, say, Us, Midsommar.
I'll tell you what, Us, my desire to rewatch is much higher with The Lighthouse. Yeah. And only because I want to start catching all the little things that I missed on first view.
Yeah.
I think with Midsommar, other than looking for the hidden faces and whatnot, like, what more is there to gain?
Have you watched it more than one time?
Yeah, I've watched it twice now.
Okay.
And I just think that, like,
out of curiosity, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'll watch it again. Ronnie hasn't seen it yet, so I'll watch it with her.
I've seen it three times, and I like it less every time.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm having the opposite.
That's
really
bold,
am having
homie.
The opposite fucking thing with that movie, for sure.
See, now, I mean, if you want to talk about, like, commercial viability and being able to appeal to a larger market, then I think us is the best of the three.
Oh, fucking well, yeah.
Because like
it's universal.
Like, us is more easily palatable than the rest. I think far and away, Lighthouse is a better movie in almost every aspect. Watching it the second time, it seems so much fucking longer. Like, you know, you see a movie the second time and like, you know, like a lot of the beats,
you know,
so it goes a lot quicker.
Right.
Dude, this
how
one
long it's going to take to get to a fucking
felt like it dragged. The first time I was so enthralled. I'm like, what's happening? But yeah. Then when I realized that like nothing's really happening while things are happening, you know, and a lot of it is kind of just these people being in proximity of each other.
Yeah.
Like when they got drunk on that night and they missed their ride, like, I'm like, okay, cool. This should be like, you know, a half hour left. That was like 40 minutes into the movie. There was still well over an hour left. Like when I looked at my phone to see what time it was, cause I can't make it through a whole movie without looking for the time. It had been an hour and 10 minutes. And I was like, holy fuck, this still has like a whole like 40 minutes left. Like,
yeah.
What are they going to do in the last 40 minutes? I don't remember them doing a whole lot. And like, they do a whole lot in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
There's something that's what I'm eager to watch it again, because when I mentioned it right at the beginning of this episode, how labored over the movie feels, I'm not saying that's a bad thing that he's done his research. This is a research heavy guy. And that all these conceivable details are tended to.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with madness, though, and psychosis, I when something feels so technically labored over, I don't know if that's antithetical to what the you know, I want to watch it again. That's what I mean. Like
it's too clean.
It's very exactly.
It's too clean to be a movie about fucking insanity.
Psychosis.
Yeah. I see. I can see what I you can get what see I'm what saying? You're talking about. Yeah.
It feels very very. Arranged.
Even at its
it
most
feels very fucking arranged.
Even at its most dirty, it still feels very clean.
Yeah. Yeah. Speak when you say dirty though, fuck, let me give it a real quick. Tactile stuff. Like you can basically smell the fucking grime.
Yeah.
In this movie.
Yeah.
Like that is extremely.
No, I guess dirty's not the right word.
It jogged my memory about other stuff.
All right. Well, I mean, I think that if you're listening, hopefully you've seen The Lighthouse. But even if you haven't, It's a treat visually, and I think
you've probably gotten a good idea of whether or not it would be your cup of tea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's black and white. Oh, the aspect ratio,
weird but great,
1.19:1.
Yeah, it's a bizarre,
which they claustrophobic.
They even had certain shots like where he was shoveling coal, where the shot felt like it was even smaller because it was really black, on the,
black
sides
on the sides
and very narrow light.
Yeah,
see, like the light in this was, like I said, it was a very.
It's its own character.
It's its own character. And, you know, Alia was saying, oh, well, obviously, you know, the light stuff is intentional, but it's like, it's so important to everything in the movie, you know, and it's all very deliberate. Like, they didn't, they didn't have electricity there, you know? So it's like, you specifically choose where to put these candles. You choose to shoot with just, you know, enough light coming through to like light up somebody's face just enough. And like, I said, there's several parts where like one character is completely shrouded in shadows and the other one's in the light, which to me lends even more validity to the idea that one of them isn't fucking real or one of them is dead. And like, I mean, I guess unless Robert Eggers comes out and just flat out says like, no, they were both there.
And he won't.
The whole time.
That's not the point.
I don't think he's that dude.
All right. Well, that's it. That's it for The Lighthouse. What's next for us? Are we watching
Parasite?
Parasite? What else is coming out next week? Something else, something big.
Well, Countdown is coming out.
Countdown.
Dr. Sleep is
Gallows.
Dr. Sleep is coming out.
Gallows 2 is
next
out
next week.
I think we should just do Gallows 2 for Patreon.
All right, I'm into
I don't think the rest of these fuckers deserve that.
And I need to see the first one.
Yeah, you do. We got to record that too. But like that would kind of mean that me and George would have to watch that movie.
All right, Matt Smith, what's the links?
You can find us on social media by searching Who Goes There Podcast.
That's
so
it.
Like Facebook and YouTube and Twitch and like one of the other ones are at Who Goes There Pod. And then Twitter is they're at Who Goes There Podcast. And Twitter is at Who Goes There Pod.
Who Goes There Podcast.
All right, dummies. We'll be talking about some movie next week. I'm not sure which, but maybe The Parasite. Maybe
The Witch.
Maybe The Witch.
Maybe the battery.
It's late. We're tired. Go fuck yourselves.
I'm not gonna worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever gonna be alright, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive.